This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 29th of November, 1954. The title of this lecture is Two-Way Communication. This lecture is 37 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
This morning, a little bit on the general subject of two-way communication. I've talked to you on this subject before, but actually there isn't enough that could be said anyhow about a two-way communication simply because there isn't enough communication. When you say communication, you can also say, in commenting on this universe, there isn't enough communication. Real simple statement. I mean, look at this, pretty clear what's wrong with him. There isn't enough communication. When he can't exteriorize, he can't exteriorize because there isn't enough communication. You get the idea? Here you have this tremendous scarcity of communication. Here you have a world with a couple of billion people in it, and none of them can talk to any of the rest of them except a few, and they talk obsessively. See? there obviously isn't enough to communicate with, is there? Here you have probably in within a mile of you here, actually, 100,000 people. All right, that 100,000 people. How many of those people have you talked to for a long time? I haven't said much to these people. See, therefore, you get to believing that the world is full of strangers. Well, the only reason you would believe the world is full of strangers is because people believe the world is full of strangers. I don't know anybody I can't open a communication line with. That's because I'm sort of a goofy fellow, and I don't mind walking up to people and say, how are you, how's your wife? And he says, I haven't got a wife. And you said, I thought so. And at which moment he gets curious about what I'm talking about, and our communication ensues. When you take up this subject of communication, you are taking up a behavior of a thetan, an awareness of awareness unit, which he can't do without. This is all fine to say, well, the thing to do is to go up in the Himalayas and to sit down on a peak, not too sharp a one, of course, and sit there and remunerate or jugapate or something, and having withdrawn from all, to immediately be 3 feet back of your head and go swinging off merrily, whistling over the hills to Valhalla. Of course, it isn't Valhalla there. When they transplanted to Sweden, they called it Valhalla, but it's all the same thing. They wanted to be elsewhere. Why? Well, it's because they couldn't be there, that's why. Now, that is the wrong frame of mind to do an exteriorization on. I have no doubt that there was somebody in India at one time or another who did exteriorize as we think of it. I have no doubt of this whatsoever. It absolutely would have to take place over the period of time we allow. But actually, in investigating these individuals, I find out what they mean by exteriorization and what we mean by exteriorization are two entirely different things. They want an awareness, a telepathy at a distance. They do not want a unit awareness from which they can view. See? Now, it may be that some of the masters back along the line have known all about this. May very well be. I might know about it earlier, too. But it might very well be that they knew all about this unit awareness, look from the point. But no data available. No data, really, available brings anybody into a state of pinpoint, that is to say, unit awareness, where he knows he is there. He knows he is this unit of awareness. He knows he is viewing from this unit of awareness and is perfectly willing to go into communication with anything. None of the data which I have to hand or have looked over fairly carefully gives one this state of beingness. There is another state of beingness, the lower harmonic of exteriorization, which is don't want to be there, and I backed out in spite of myself. Get the idea? That is buttered all over the universe. A fellow with that kind of a condition, if you were to say to him, give me some places where you were not, you would run into the hottest comlag that you ever saw. I mean, a beautiful comlag. Give me some places where you're not. And he would start, he'd probably start with the adjacent universes as the first places he could find where he was not. You see? He'd get a buttered all over the place. Manifestation. Actually, this fellow will talk to you about astral walking. He'll talk to me about telepathy. He'll talk to you about sensitivity, what you were thinking about. He will try to read your future. He will do all sorts of interesting things, none of which are communication, and all of which are a substitute therefore. Let's be real careful then how we look at this thing called communication. Communication is cause, distance, effect. If you don't know that when we finish up, you really have missed. With an intention and attention and duplication. That's communication. Cause, distance, effect, and intention, attention, and a duplication, or a near duplication in the communication. Follow this? That's communication. Somebody who's buttered all over the universe, who doesn't know where he is, does not, of course, know the emanation point of his communication and immediately violates this formula. And he is sick and he'll comlag accordingly. Now, I've known a lot of the boys who are good boys. I've communicated with them one way or the other in India, Tibet. Not in Tibet. I have never, this lifetime, frequented Tibet very much. But in China, in the Western Hills particularly, I've tried to communicate with a lot of these boys who were super swami, you know, new grade. Now, many years afterwards, I understand them bounteously with a refulgence they would regurgitate about. Communication lag, brother. You say, how are you? You're walking by the courtyard the next day and he's over there still sitting on the prayer rug or something of the sort. And he says, good. Now, it's quite one thing to read about this in the book. It's quite another thing to experience it. Quite one thing to hear about a communication lag, and quite another one to look at one. So experience communication lag. Now, you've all seen some communication lags, haven't you? You've seen nothing compared to the communication lag you get from somebody who is buttered all over the universe and will telepath, ectopath, and other path, who will astral walk and deliver messages for you without a Western Union stamp. But here's our problem here. I'm just trying to show you something. Every once in a while you run into some preclear who can do all these things. If you feel insecure about this, ask him for some places where he is not. And then if he appears to be very glib about this, ask him if he's absolutely certain he's not there. And if you run into any kind of a communication lag at all, I mean any kind of a lag, even the lag necessary to comprehend the question, you're looking at a lower harmonic, which is buttered all over and which violates the communication formula. Why are we talking about this communication formula? Well, if we're talking about a two-way communication as a process, we certainly better look at this formula. Two-way communication is this formula, east, and then the same formula, west. Get the idea? Cause, distance, effect, with intention, attention, and duplication. Then, cause, distance, effect, and intention, attention, and duplication. Unless we've got both of those, we don't have two-way communication. And we don't have a friendly atmosphere either. Now, you can deliver communications on this formula, which are perfect communication. You take a rifle and go out here and shoot a cop. Well, now, it doesn't become a two-way communication unless he can shoot at you. So in order to have a communication, a two-way communication, your anxiety might bring you up to a point where you'd miss. See, if you shot him and killed him, then he couldn't shoot you, could he? And so you would just have had a one-way communication. When it comes to murder, slaughter, pain, misery, and mayhem, one tries to avoid a two-way communication. He has the choice, you see. He can either have a fight or a two-way communication, you see, and miss. See, if he misses, he's going to have a two-way communication. Or he could be accurate, but he just has a one-way communication. So other people go through life with a philosophy of a one-way communication. See? If they have to have a philosophy on the subject of communication, you can be absolutely sure that they're into solidity and out of sanity. You can be sure of this, that their primary interest is mayhem, misery. Every time you see somebody who is worried about communication, he's worried about it because he's gone through some strata of life, which included mopery and dopery, as far as he was concerned. Good solidity. There have been periods of his life that were not free and easy, which he would not like to discuss with you. He's just sure that if he starts communicating when he's in real bad condition, now let's get right down to cases here. When he starts communicating, he's quite sure that he's liable to trigger off more than he can handle. All right, let's take forgetfulness. This is a little side panel here. You wonder what a buttered all over the universe got to do with this. Well, it's the fact that the guy has no source point. So he can't find out where he's talking from, and you can't find out where you're talking to. So let's take this buttered all over the universe, and let's find out why he's there. We talked about solidity, all right? Solidity, it means he doesn't want to be there. He's been shot a few times too many. You know, almost anybody can stand being shot 50, 60,000 times. It's that 71st thousandth time that is an upsetting one. Almost anybody could get through a few hundred thousand wars, but it's that millionth one. That's what gets them. World War II, for instance, is occasionally the straw that breaks the camel's back in a case. It was so boring. Look who they had for generals. Anyhow, when we get down to cases here, we discover that this boy we're talking to or trying to talk to has gotten into a condition where merely starting a flow is liable to trigger more than he can handle. You see that? Any case is to some slight degree a fission case. You know, nuclear fission is liable to occur by reason of his making almost any remark you could think of. Almost any remark is liable to start chain reaction, which will cause him to blow up. And of course, he's done enough reprehensible things that he knows that if he really started to roll, he'd probably get arrested and in the soup and lose control of himself and so forth. You see, one of the difficulties is he doesn't know where he is. You see, so he doesn't know where he would have to be arrested. But probably you know where he is. He's very confused. Let's put it down at that. All right. Now, what about forgetfulness? An individual starts to forget when he has lost too much. Why does he start to forget? He just dramatizes loss. Now he starts to lose data, too. See? That's the basic modus operandi behind forgetfulness. Loss. You can improve a person's memory simply by remedying his havingness. All right. Now, we look into this pattern of existence of forgetfulness. However, one of the first surface manifestations we discover is the fact that a fellow has immediately in this life, he has right next door to the moment where you're auditing him, something that occurred in this life which had loss connected with it, but was too horrible, too bad to remember, see? All right, let's take this incident, which is too bad to remember, and by the rule of A equals A equals A, let's get all kinds of other incidents merged with it. All roads might lead to this incident, you see. This is a design and plot of Freudian analysis, by the way, and not a particularly correct one or usable one, but a tremendously interesting one, because it happens to have a truth in it. It does not contain the resolution of all cases, which Freud hoped it would. And that is, by association, the individual feels he's going to trip into something which is too painful for him to recall. A much clearer statement than old Sigmund ever made. He says, well, the libido is over on the left-hand side of the lapidus, and this is what causes the censor to sit up there and make very, very sure that the Oedipus goes into the lapidary. And after we get so mechanical about this, it got lost. But in view of the fact that Freud, he didn't train many men, in view of the fact that I was lucky enough to get what I know about Freudian analysis from a man that Freud trained, which man trained me, I was always a hound for simplicities. I figured if they used words of more than one syllable, they were doing so because they were obfuscating the fact that they didn't know. Let me see. I just didn't know. Okay. So I was very sure that we got this Freudian analysis down to simplicity, and that is its anatomy. See, a fellow has a pool of pain and guilt and goo. And all roads lead to this, so if he starts to talk about anything, he'll sooner or later go into it. And so the obvious solution is to make this guy talk. The obvious solution, if he talks long enough, he'll slide into this and recount this painful incident whereby his vast social guilt of having raped his Aunt Elda or something when he was 2 and she was 68. This will, of course, clear up the whole case. And this is very, very fine as a theory, but it doesn't work. See? Because the basic modus operandi back of the case, the repression of the case, and so forth, is not a big feeling of guilt. And these incidents are not so painful, and they are not so suppressive, that when remembered, they immediately release the case. This happens often enough to make a very careless observer believe that he is doing the right thing. That's all the oftener it happens. Once it's the blue moon sort of reaction. You'll be talking to some preacher someday, two-way communication, and you will say yap, yap, and all of a sudden he was like, and you will say, what's the matter? And he will say, oh, I just recall. Yes, I just recall strangling my little sister and so forth. And told me I was going to go to jail, and I really feel bad about it. And he will sit there and feel dopey and bad for a while, and next day claim he feels a lot better. Don't talk to him 3 days later, however, he will have relapsed. That's why everybody was so insistent when Dianetics was issued that we have stable cases. They knew they didn't exist. You know, just the mere recall of this guilt and that sort of thing actually cleared up something so momentarily that you could count on its coming back again. This is a horrible fact. Because it's not the modus operandi. It's just a little top crust thinkingness design of what's really going on. Here we have an incident. And this individual stops communicating because all roads lead to agony. Because communication itself, when dealt with bullets or income tax reports, can be painful. It can be physically painful. Communication doesn't solely and merely consist of yap, yap, walla, walla. It also consists of bang. It follows the perfect formula. There's nothing wrong with bang as a communications formula. You get a two-way communication when the other fellow goes bang, too. See? Now, that's a two-way communication. And that's painful. People don't like this. So actually, the repressive incident on it, if you want to go on downstairs into the lower depths as to why people stop communicating, it's because all roads lead to agony. Physical agony. Physical beingness could be said to be the mind congealed. Solidity is, you might say, is a solidified mental reaction. Men are walking around no longer talking about birth, but wearing birth. You get the idea? They can wear a communication. That's why mimicry is so effective. That's communication too. All right. If communication is this painful, the individual goes down till after a while he's solid. From being buttered all over the universe, he comes back and says, well, we got to get it together somehow or another, and we'll crowd it all in here, and on earth, and here we are. And now we're not all over the universe, we're merely solid. When you exteriorize him, he goes out of the body in a theta body, what they call a theta body. I don't know why they call it a theta body, however, because it's solid enough to shoot. Hardly theta, it's mass. Mass information. Oh, black bodies and all sorts of oddities. You'll see space opera suits and all kinds of things. Thetans have a great hand at carrying around old facsimiles and junk and stuff and so forth. Old tin cans and unreadable labels and half-eaten facsimiles. They're really good at this. Anyway. That stuff simply solid. All right, we get this guy, we start this fellow talking. He knows that if he starts communicating in any direction, he'll come to pieces, and it will be a very painful process. And so he doesn't want anything to do with this coming to pieces. See, if he just starts communicating any way, shape, or form, that communication will be a sort of a solid affair. And that's painful. He doesn't want anything to do with it. So there sits your pre-clear at the beginning of a two-way communication. Two-way communication to him is, you're going to shoot at him, and then he knows he can't shoot back because he hasn't got a gun. So there isn't any way to talk anyhow. He knows that it's nice of you to go to all this work to pick up these big concrete blocks and lug them down the distance part of the communication formula and drop them there. But he knows that if you do that, then he'll have to go to the enormous work of picking up a huge word like the, and another huge word like day, and a gigantic word is, and this tremendously long word that he probably have to use truck and trailers for, you know, beautiful. And to say this, you see, is picking up all his concrete. You see, back up the line. He's got no derricks. His machinery's all broken down. You'll see this sometime. Words are solid. I've seen somebody who was a real soul on. By the way, it wasn't general semantics that did this to him. It was general semantics they picked up. But I've seen somebody actually picking up words, general semanticist, and examining them before use. You know, examining them, making sure. Very fantastic. I mean, there's a solidity. Even the thought has become solid. So, the entire secret of matter, the entire secret of matter, for which nuclear physics is searching so wildly, so ferociously, so stupidly, is that non-communication results in a solidity. A life form restraining communication will bring about a solidity. Got that now? A life unit restraining communication will bring about a solidity. He's going to communicate anyhow. It's all right in his native state to say that he was on cloud nine doing all right, not communicating with anybody, but he's not in that native state now. He's not on cloud nine. He's in the best universe, solar system, Earth. And he is not doing anything but restraining communication. Now, you look at these pre-clears, you say, there that fellow sits, it's a lump of lead, lump of matter. There he sits, he's not communicating, he's very solid, he's a terrible condition, so forth, simply because he's not communicating. My dear fellow student of the universe, let me let you in on a very, very interesting secret. If he were not doing anything, he would not be in bad condition. You understand? We say this man is in bad shape because he is sitting there not communicating. No, no. If we could make that simple a statement, it would all be so easy. But the statement cannot be made that simply because it doesn't describe what is happening. He is restraining communication. So we look at this preacher who is sitting there in your auditing chair, and if we recognize clearly that this man is restraining communication and that everything he can use for energy is in there making solid walls to restrain solid avalanches, if we realize he is a problem in kinetics, even if he is a catatonic schiz, he's a problem in kinetics, not statics. When he's exteriorized, he's a problem in statics. See, he's in a simple. I mean, there he sits, and he's the viewpoint, and he can look around, and he can communicate, and he can get communicated to. He's a little leery about being communicated at it first. He said, what do you know? Nobody's shooting at me this century. And he goes on, that's a problem in statics, isn't it? See, that's a problem in viewpoints, and it's an interesting problem. But this other boy, who is apparently the static, and this is where engineering, nuclear physics, and so forth went backwards. The boy who is apparently the static, who is sitting there, is apparently in an equilibrium of forces. If he were, he'd be happy. That is not a static. No solid can be a static. No solid in this universe can be in an equilibrium of forces. You see this ashtray sitting here, actually, to an engineer, to a physicist, is a static. He says, he'll tell you this. Every once in a while you get an argument with these boys. You say, hey, that is in an equilibrium of forces. And you say, how in the name of God can anything be in an equilibrium of forces which is traveling in eight different directions simultaneously, none of which are balanced? And he said, what do you mean traveling in eight different directions? You can say, back up, bud, and take a look at Earth. That thing is traveling at 1,000 miles an hour just by reason of being on the surface of Earth. That's just one motion around the axis of Earth, 1,000 miles an hour. How about the other one, a tremendous speed with which Earth is going around the sun? Just because it takes it a year doesn't mean it's not moving fast. It's moving pretty fast. If you want to look up and look at Mars and see how it jumps around the sky, you'll see how Earth is jumping around the sun. So there are just two reasons that's not a static. And that isn't a static. That is a restraint of forces. Restraint. That is a restriction of forces. And the moment these forces were no longer involved in restricting themselves, it would cease to exist and become a problem in statics. But until that occurs, it will continue to be a problem in kinetics. Your preclear can't exteriorize, who's having a rough time, is a problem in kinetics. Motions. And he's got them all held back right here. And he feels if he starts to talk, something is going to explode. Every once in a while, a preclear will tell you this. And the odd part of it is the forces which he is holding in check, which he's holding balanced, he thinks, he hopes, actually have nothing to do with his personality. He can simply step away from that whole unbalanced proposition, and it'll stay right there. And the first step is teaching him that he can say something and not explode. Your preclear is a problem in restraint of communication. He is not a problem in non-communication. Comlag is a measure of the restraint of communication. It's not a measure of blah. You understand? We're dealing in tensions, we're dealing in forces, we're dealing in kinetics. Your preclear sitting there is a tremendous number of mixed up vectors, all going somewhere with nowhere to arrive. The basic solution of this case is, of course, communication, straight line communication. And all we do is work on a gradient scale, making him one way or another communicate better and better, and better his communication formula. We go through 6 steps to do so. When we arrive at the top, he can exteriorize. I get clear? The first thing to do is make him say something, or touch your hand, or cross his legs when you do, or you cross your legs when he does. In other words, the beginning of a communication. We take it on from there. Two-way communication. Then we show him he can communicate a little bit with his past. And we show him he can communicate with the walls around him. Then we show, by golly, he can actually duplicate an action on his own part without it blowing up. And so on. What we're teaching him is something he has been disabused of knowing. See, he's been disabused of knowing something. He thinks something can happen. He thinks something can happen to him. Static. Actually, he is avoiding the sad fact that nothing can happen to him. And so he gets tremendously involved in these things that might happen to him. And these are all restraints. And he is the only one that can make anything happen to him, actually. But you have to get him to start communicating. Now, how can you get him to start communicating? One of the best ways in the world to do what he is doing. Talk about problems. Any kind of problems, particularly present time problem. There is even a two-way communication mechanical process called give me some more problems. Not that you could be to yourself or anything like that, but just give me some more problems. Just get even more elementary about it. You sit there and talk about problems by the hour. That's the one place where you can really key these boys. If you can't key them there and you can't get them in two-way communication, then mimicry and lower scale processes of mimicry, all of which are mimicry processes, are evidently the only thing that will get them into communication. You don't get them into communication by putting electrodes on their head and stamping on the voltage. It doesn't put anybody in communication. It simply blows up their ridges. I guess it demonstrates that force is force is force, and the psychiatrist and intellectual never meet. All right. You see a little bit more about this? Matter of fact, his restraints are so great that he himself no longer comprehends what is restraining what. He is to that degree incomprehensible. We can describe his condition, but as far as tracking the actual vector lines and so forth, and he's lost this in the Dark Ages. That's long gone. He will go on and track vector lines for you, and he will track out this incomprehensible map of old communication lines for you by the year. Not just by the hour, he'll do it by the year. He'll go up and down these old lines trying to as-is these old things. What's he got there? He's not dependent on this stuff. And what he has there is quite cute. It is simply cause to effect with the cause and effect both lost and the distance collapsed between. And he will trace these old lines just endlessly for him. There isn't any reason for him to trace these old lines, have him make some new ones. Therefore, present time, two-way communication is tremendously therapeutic. It was the communication itself which made Freudian psychoanalysis work. It wasn't recalling anything specific. If you still think that Dianetics and Scientology are tremendously interested in the guilts and secrets of a preclear's past, and so forth, then you're still oriented somewhat on psychoanalytic lines. And we're not even vaguely interested in whether or not he had a secret in the past. Well, confidentially, you would have to go into binary digits to get the number of secrets this man has in his past. That's right, just binary digits. It was the time that he blew up the planet, and the time that they murdered the captain, and the time he was a prostitute in Hong Kong, and the time of his death, and the other time, and so forth, that he was head of the Gestapo, and that was the other time, and so on, and it just goes back by the millions and millions of years. And it's a lovely theory that all we had to do was spring one little secret. You know, he was fussing. Fine. The actual fact is that he is repressing. See, he is repressing. He is restraining. Aberration, restriction, synonyms. They're synonyms. Aberration is restriction. But the solider he is, the more he is restraining. You see that? The less communicating he is, the more he is restraining. There is no point of non-communication. See? About the only non-communication there'd be is when the individual would be entirely free and 3 feet back of his head in perfect condition. He could then go into a state of non-communication. He'd say, look, huh? Nothing to it. A lot of boys, you get 3 feet back of the head, they're still restraining. Well, there are ways to solve that, but we'll talk about them later. Thank you very much.